Good morning, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Vietnam Innovators. I have an old friend in the house this morning. Her name is Phong Chan. We have Phong Chan on the show today. She's the director and founder of Kaze Studios, one of the most longest tenured kind of studios here, focused on design and real estate in Vietnam. She's been a designer here in Vietnam for 20 or so years.
Yeah.
She's seen the whole development of Vietnam from the very beginning. Not just when the towers and the apartments that we're seeing pop up these days here in Saigon, but since the first towers were built 20 years ago. And she's been a huge part in the social and kind of development landscape of Vietnam real estate since then. Welcome to the show, Phong Chan.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure. I've worked with you one time, and that was a wonderful experience. I hope to work with you more in the future.
Happy to do that again.
Today's podcast, and thank you for sharing kind of your thoughts over the years with me, and I'm very excited to have you here today, is to talk about the future of development and real estate, and particularly the sustainability of it. Mm-hmm. We see so many buildings popping up. Some are really nice on the outside, but maybe not on the inside. And some just don't last. They kind of deteriorate and,
have you noticed?
Don't look so good after years. But sometimes it's not even the developers' material and quality build, but it's about how they think about the spaces too.
Yeah,
what are the tenants going in, everything.
Yeah.
We have a lot to deep dive in today, guys. Mm. So if you do have questions, drop them in the comments. Maybe Phong Chan will answer them later. So Phong Chan, before we get started today's podcast, we always like to start with some rapid fire questions.
Okay.
First question, what brought you to Vietnam?
I was apparently meant to come here.
What excites you about Vietnam?
It's the most vibrant place I've ever been to.
If you had to explain to a five-year-old what Kaze is and what you do at Kaze, how would you do it?
We draw houses and we do draw interior.
What's your biggest achievement in your career at Kaze?
To be where we are at now.
Name three projects of Kaze that people should check out.
We should look at St. Clark Phu Quoc right now. Take a look at always Mia Nha Trang Resort. It's like an old-timer.
Mm.
And I also think that there's a new one called The Yachts in Ha Long Bay.
How do you stay creative?
Because I love what I'm doing.
What's a recent favorite movie, TV show, book, or podcast that has influenced your work?
I just watch Ted Lasso and every TV podcast. I've been listening to quite some of your podcasts.
Okay. On a Sunday at 10 a.m., where would you be and what would you be doing?
Last Sunday, I went for a Udo class with my 3-year-old.
And last question, what's your favorite Vietnamese word or phrase?
Oi.
Oi, okay. Oi definitely is ranking quite up there. You've been in the business for 20 years. I know how challenging it can be as well. Lots of new firms in the business, lots of competition, but you've been up there always delivering projects. So why don't we just start with that? Why have developers continued to come to Kaze? What are they attracted to when they think of Kaze? And I'll follow up with some other.
In any business, there needs to be balance in it. But when you have around 50 to 70% old clients coming back, I think that shows that you have some valid. You've done your job well, at least the old one. So I think that's part of it, why we are still here. Integrity and trust, that's what I'm operating with.
Very good. And they keep coming back to you.
Mm.
My follow-up question to that would be, what are the kind of recurring challenges that come even with these returning clients that make you wonder, how can we as an industry move forward to progress, not just ourselves, but also just the general industry? What are those things that keep popping up in your experience?
Like it should apply to my business, but I think in general that development needs to think that consultancy in general cannot only be 1% of their development. Considering how much money they make, let's say, on apartments, in Europe, we do around 10% on broad scale on all the consultants.
Okay.
They do 1% here.
Wow. So if I was building a hotel and the whole cost of the budget, it's, let's say, $50 million, typically 1% would be saved for a consultant. So not just the designers, but potentially
all the rest
the engineering,
of them, yeah.
Potentially.
Maybe it's just a little bit, but you know, let's maybe add it up, maybe 2 to 3%, but it's very, very little. Considering what you should spend on crop consultant. See,
you mentioned the global standard.
Yeah.
Let's say, in, or at least in Europe, from your past experience, is 10%.
It's 10%. Yeah.
So break that down for me. What's the difference there? Is it the level of expertise? Is it the time being taken?
Yeah.
Like, well, why everything, justify the difference?
Well, I guess it takes, let's say, 3 years to build a fairly, you know, we call it 5-star hotel here, or 5-star apartment development. That will take between 3 years. In Europe, it will take 5 to 7 to maybe even 10 years. Mm. Of course, you lose a lot of money, but you know, you are going in to invest in something which have longevity. It feels like always when we walk into a development here, they don't build for longevity.
Okay.
It feels like they're thinking maybe 10, 15 years ahead and that's it. And it kind of shows on the way we are asked to select materials, the quality of it, the speed we're building in, because there's no way you can build a real sustainable building so in such a short time.
Okay.
I mean, honestly, the cement can't dry.
Let me touch upon the idea of longevity and sustainability, because when people hear about this word sustainability, they think ESG, not just falling asleep, but they think it's, oh, it's something that makes me have to spend more money. It's not necessarily driving more revenue for me in the future. It's not value creation. It's just a cost center.
No.
So what's your answer to that? Maybe break that down for us. Is it, it's not just a feel good, social good kind of thing.
No, why it's definitely not. It's definitely not. But I think that let's just take Vietnam because that's my playground. I know that the developers here, let's say the one who develops apartments, is like there's such a gain of building apartments and selling them again. It's the margin is so high. Mm-hmm. It's a template to build because they build with very minimal materials. It's like, you know, concrete and steel and glass, bang, up. And as less advanced the architecture can become, they still build on probably a prime estate. So it's the value will still be there. So they don't have to add so much into development to actually gain the output.
Mm.
And that means that, you know, they just jump over where the fence is lowest, if that makes any sense.
Okay.
And I think most of the developers here, wrong to say, there's quite a lot of old men, and they really don't know anything about sustainability.
Mm.
They think that sustainability is planting a tree or making a golf course. That's the level. Of course, it's not all, right? But you know, this just like when we talk about it, when I get into, let's say, the podium of any development, I say, what I'm going to do with development of the podium, and they like, oh, well, we need some kind of, or the people who lives in the apartment needs to do something, and I'm saying, okay, X, Y, and Z, you should maybe have green parks, barbecue. That these, let's say, these things comes from Singapore, like creating a lifestyle, but it feels like by doing that, that's just the surface of things. It's all the entertainment of things. But the underlying of it all is how can we create parks and greenery and a proper environment also in your apartment that actually is good for people in the long terms.
So,
and just give me an example here. So one example would be glazing. That's where there's a lot of cost in glazing on these developments, right? But if you do double glazing, if you do certain kind of UV protection on the glaze, if you do some kind of architecture that kind of shields from the sun, UV beams to penetrate through the apartment, people wouldn't use so much power, energy consumption in general.
Mm.
And then you can say, well, energy here is not so expensive, you're not paying electricity, but hey, you know, that's why we do so much in Europe, because the electricity is expensive and it may or may not come. But one thing is that it's hurt people's pockets or not. Another thing is that to produce energy costs a lot, also for the environment. So the awareness of all of that is just not in the, you know, in the back head of the developers.
Would you say it's just a lack of awareness, just not really
caring? It's a lack of knowledge.
Or is it a lack of content that's being delivered to...
I think for developer, it's really lack of knowledge. Their focus is a different place. And I know they come from a different place. It's about developing, making money, how much can we get out per square meter, how much can we maximize it.
Mm.
I get that. I get it for true. But it's just a very short-term thinking.
Mm.
And look at the buildings we have here. The first one that I experienced when built was Vista, done by a Singaporean developer.
Mm-hmm.
Look at it now. Look at the facade of it. It looks like something coming down because I don't know where in the end of or in the chain of development that they saved cost on paint, for example. It gets to be cheap, the cheapest aluminium frame of the windows, cheapest handles you get there. I think the construction have changed a bit. They pride themselves when I come into different development, oh, we're using proper windows or whatever. But they still all have the same problems. They use, or they end up selecting the same things, like cheap aircon systems, or we just do split units, maybe just one layer of glass. We don't really care about the sound from the noise outside. God knows, we know there's a lot of noise from the street.
So let's talk about the two outcomes as a result of not investing enough. So there's two main groups that are impacted. One is the consumers.
Yes.
So we talk about the people buying the apartments, buying the commercial properties. At first, you might be attracted by, oh, the developer has a good brand name, let's say.
Absolutely, right? Yeah.
Or perhaps, oh, the materials look fantastic. They're using really nice terrazzo. But that doesn't necessarily mean anything. Or similar. And consumers need to look out for that. So absolutely. What do they need to look out for? Exactly, because what you're sharing is not going to change overnight, I think, that, which is my next question, by the way, like what can change to make on both sides? Yeah. What can consumers do right now to protect themselves in the short term?
Again, it gets a little bit complicated, but I want them to just ask the very simple questions. You know,
so what are those questions?
It's like, how is the energy efficiency utilized in the building? What kind of cooling system are we using? Are we collecting rainwater, because there's so much rain here, for reusing into the system? Small things that makes the building a more efficient place, but also less expensive building to build in or to live in.
Do the consumers know what the right answer is? I asked that because, you know, I'm a prospective buyer. I fit the mold of a prospective buyer.
Yeah.
I have some savings. I haven't bought anything yet. I'm a first-time home buyer.
Yeah.
I'm interested. I like what you're sharing, which is not only the quality, at least at first, but the quality for longevity.
Yeah.
I believe in sustainability. Mm. Right now, honestly, it's not my number one priority, but it's up there. Mm. But perhaps I need education about why and what's the impact for me in the long term.
Yeah.
So what is the right answer? When I ask that question, I don't mean any specific answer,
absolutely,
but
no.
How do I know it's the right answer?
The answer they're developing giving you?
Yes.
Actually, these days, there's no excuse. Google it. waste in developments.
You know, actually, this is an interesting question because an answer from you because I think in English content, for instance, there may be more resources.
Yeah, okay.
And also, not only that, but not just for the owners, but also the developers. I don't think there's enough content or awareness or understanding that's translated in an effective way, meaning like the thought leaders of the industry today are the ones sharing it or the ones perhaps, you know, someone like you, obviously you're only one part of the whole value chain of a property, but there aren't enough people talking about this in a trusted way. That's my short answer.
Okay.
Because I've known you for a long time and everything I think you're saying is pretty spot on. But generally speaking, most people aren't talking about this. And even if I was a more average consumer, because I know a few more people than the average person in this space, I don't even know if I believe them because I don't know what their motives are. Are their motives to generate more revenue, which is, of course, always true.
Yeah.
But who are the people that are the gatekeepers? Who are the people that can build that trust? I think that's where the gap is. And you know, let's go fill it together, which is my follow-up question.
Yeah.
You reached out sharing about this a couple years ago. And when I read it, I was like, that makes sense. Let's do it. And here we are today, 2 years later. So my question for you, having worked here for so long, what are your bullet point, high level comments about what we can do as an industry? So developers is one side, homeowners, first time homeowners are another, designers like you. What needs to be happening?
Honestly, I remember I was thinking, how can I make it a really good example? It's the same with food.
Mm.
You say we're talking about food, we're talking about slow down on eating meat, for example, because, well, first of all, we have created this extreme industry that had fed us well, but we cannot continue having cow farms and chicken farms and what have we the way we do, because it takes up land, it put a huge CO2 footprint on the environment, and we don't need to eat all that meat. It's an awareness, but it's also a thing that people are like, yeah, all these hippies. Right? It's just, I'm going to lose my meat, right? But eventually, because there's not enough food for the 6 billion people we're at on a global scale, there's simply not enough food. There might be enough food for some, but not for everyone. Okay, so let's take it to the level of an apartment. It's a little bit the same. If I live in an apartment, besides from feeling safe, comfortable, I mean, comfortable is one thing, because do you feel comfortable if your aircon is just standing there and just making a lot of noise and just tapping out your money out of your pocket because it's not optimized? The system that is connected to in the building is really shitty. You turn on the water, you brush your teeth every day, but the water is not clean. How do they filter the water? And for example, we cannot drink the water in Vietnam. We have quite a lot of water, but you know, putting the money, putting the effort into actually making a clean system, clean sewage and all of that, that's the next step. Mm. I know we're talking about it. Vietnam is amazing because they're actually developing really, really fast. But I want them to develop with the chance and opportunity to do it better than the rest of the Asian countries, to be really honest.
You know, I think we're approaching it from two different but same angles. So what I mean by that is, I'm thinking about it from a media perspective. I think that what's driving the change, or will drive most of the change, will be from the consumers, because if the consumers demand these things,
the
people selling things will respond to that need.
Absolutely.
So you're seeing that in the market today already, because Vietnamese are wealthier than ever. They have more money to spend than ever. The demand, for example, luxury apartments or grade A office towers, because there's more companies and individuals demanding those that need, it's being served, you can say, a little too much right now. But at the same time, you're coming from the developer side, which is, we need to enact change from the developer side, create that supply that can, in a way, fit the want from the consumer side, in a way.
Well, but this is the thing. Define luxury. I mean, I'm doing it right now. It's like, and I'm sitting, every time I get a new developer, they all want 5-star luxury apartments or hotels or resorts. And it's like, define luxury. What is luxury? And luxury is also like a trend with a lot of things, because it's not just gold and fancy car and expensive bags. And that doesn't add into your development. So what does it make it luxury? And I think if luxury could be part of the sustainability within the building, they're saying we have very high standards. That actually comes to technology as well. So I know that the part of what some developers are trying to do is saying, okay, we bring in very high standard in as our technology is improving. You can control the heat, you can turn off and down the light, all these things which are very operational in the building, but it serves something. If we can serve costs.
So let me break down the value chain, particularly from a monetary point of view.
Okay.
Because I think a lot of the listeners here today, as buyers, are thinking, okay, what's my entry point for my first time home? I like everything you're saying, but how does that impact the price I'm going to pay? And then let's also approach it from the developer side. How much am I spending more, at least at first, and how much am I saving later because of what you're suggesting? So let's start with the buyer.
Okay.
I'm interested in buying a 2-bedroom apartment here in Ho Chi Minh City today. I'm looking at all my options. I'm sure there are some in the market that are thinking about sustainability well and some that are not, but they're all luxury, let's say. Yeah. What can I expect in terms of cost difference, but also cost saving in the future?
Okay, so I just read up some numbers. They were made in 2014, so they might be to be updated as well. The source comes from Green Viet, but I was reading, if you are adding sustainable elements into your building, let's say it will cost you, or it'll be 10 to 15% extra, for example, a better air conditioning system, then over an operational scale, over 4 or 5 years, you will actually gain back and save around 20 to 30% in energy. And that's quite a substantial numbers to look at.
Yes.
So just giving, that's it. And it's not set enough. Even I was talking to my colleagues in the industry, and they were saying, oh, I wish there was like a calculation so I could tell them that if you invest in a better AC or MEP system, which is like 80% of the cost of the building, we can actually save that much.
So are these numbers at a global standard, though? Or are these
relevant to Vietnam? That was a Vietnamese standard. That was calculated on a Vietnamese standard. I'll come back to you and give you a global standard, because I think it ranged similar.
Well, I think the Vietnamese one's more important, because there's dynamics here about like interest rates, about energy costs, about maintenance costs are very much less or more than the global standard. True. So I just wanted to clarify that.
Yeah.
So let's approach it from the developer side. And that's where you really are coming from, right?
Yeah.
I know you've bought apartments yourself, so you have that owned experience. But from the developer angle, you mentioned right now we're spending 1% out of the total development cost on consultancies, things like this.
Mm.
I'm sure there's also an added production and outcome costs related to the build as well when these things are advised. So break that down for me. I'm building a luxury apartment tower. I'm building the next Vista here in District 2, let's say. How would you expect those costs to vary initially and then over time, if you were to break it down?
So how much I will invest and how much it will keep back on me. But it will be this, it was, let's say you invest 15 to 20% extra into your building.
Mm-hmm.
But over, let's say, 4 or 5 years, you will get it back with 20 or 30%.
Mm.
And that will, that let's break it down. That will be consumers that would like to buy into apartments that has longevity.
Mm-hmm.
It will be like, I guess it's also, there's a part that's feeling good, not because it's only luxury, but also because I'm actually not making such a big footprint.
Mm.
So again, trend, I guess, trend from people.
Okay.
So those would be the things that as a first time consumer, as you were like, I'm buying an apartment and I'm buying this cool building that is actually really green.
Mm.
It has maybe a certain certificates, LEED standard, LOTUS, whatever they will apply to it. And I'm feeling good by living there because every time I turn on the water, it's recyclable in some way or the other. And I know it's clean, it's filtered. There's a lot of, let's say, luxury benefits. Imagine that one of the benefits will be that you just turn on the tap in your apartment and you don't have to, you know, you can drink it.
Mm.
That's quite a luxury.
Is there any development right now in Saigon that you have that luxury, would you say, from your understanding?
No, I bought it into an apartment that really, really tried hard. Mm-hmm. But they were almost pioneers. They were always too early. And there's some of the, and I'm talking to the engineer and said, it's impossible to make clean water as it is right now because the piping system is so old. So even though we create quite clean water from the distillery or the cleaning factory, because it goes through the piping and the tanks, the piping is so old that it kind of contaminate the water before it reaches the output.
Okay.
So that's a problem. Then you need to filter it again, which is okay. You can do that. So you do it and have another filtration in your building with all the carbon filters and sand and what.
Sounds very expensive.
Well,
if
I'm a luxury client, if I'm a first-time buyer and I can afford to $5 million dollars on an apartment.
Mm.
God damn it. I would like to have clean water in my taps.
Right, right.
And I think that's what you should demand as a client.
Mm.
I want clean water. Why do I have to bring in these ugly 20 liters barrels and they're all over the place and nobody ever knows where to put them?
I have another question for you. And this has to do with, I guess you could say, the wealth disparity in Vietnam that's happening right now.
Yeah.
So I recently read a report that Vietnam is one of the fastest countries in the world for the number of millionaires.
Yes.
Being created annually.
Okay, yeah.
I forget the exact numbers, but there's two classifications. So people with more than $30 million, there's a certain number of folks now in that group, and it's accelerating quickly.
Okay.
So $30 million net worth. And then more than $1 million is also growing quite quickly.
Yeah.
So my question for you is, are only the millionaires standing to benefit from the implementation of these ideas and projects, or is it
for everyone?
So is it actually though, if they're able to?
No, because the thing is, it should again. Then it comes back to a completely different thing: is that the government wants well for their society, that incentives to build, it can be mid-range or it can be high-end, but all of them get incentives to build certain green tools into their development. That doesn't have to be only for the rich. Really, I mean, clean water, it should be for everyone.
Mm.
It shouldn't just be for the one who can afford it.
Right.
But what I'm saying is, because I'm dealing with this small percentage of wealthy, like if you're that wealthy and you pay $5 million or $10 million for an apartment, you should damn ask for clean water. And you should ask for that your air condition can run so efficient so the heat is obtained again in the building and used to cool down and what have you, like all these technical stuff. But it should be a part of the dress of luxury.
Are there developers or existing developments right now in Vietnam that serve what you're mentioning? Like
not for apartments,
clean water
for offices, yes.
Offices,
and
yes.
I know you've been talking to some of them.
Yeah.
So I know Deutsche Haus has done quite some things to get to the platinum LEED thing. And I think it's quite a lot in the facade and the MP system and the way they recycling the heat as one of them. But again, it was a cooperation between the German government. So, you know, you have some incentives there already. Mm. Whereas Vietnam on its own, the government used to say, wow, we, you know, let's give you some incentives for clean water or have some kind of MEP system that works more efficient and pollute. Mm. Yeah. And it should not just apply to the rich people. Of course, it should apply to the whole country.
Okay, I have a follow-up question that has to do with your business, which is a design company.
Yes.
So your studio has been around for decades and pretty well respected. You have a roster of great clients, I'm sure, great team. And
what do I do?
No, well, so that's... So it's not just what you can do, but what your industry can do. So I could probably, you know, if we had 10 minutes to just sit around, I could probably list off 30 studios / teams that I know working in your space. What can you guys as an industry do potentially together to ensure that it's moving in that direction?
Well, number one is our knowledge. And then, you know, use us as consultants. I mean, keep saying, you know, why don't we do a nursery? Well, you have all this land and you're not going to plan building for the next 3 or 4 or 5 years. Let's put a nursery here because you will need all these trees next time you're doing the development. So instead of getting trees from, I don't know, Mekong or whatever, you just have them right there. That's one kind of transportation sustainability.
Let me touch upon that. So we're here at Empire City. Yeah. I love this particular area. Yeah. I think they're quite progressive in how they think. Mm. They have a lot of open land right now. So you would suggest putting a nursery there?
Well, I mean, if you have leftover space, why not? Because eventually, because this is a swamp, you're building on a swamp, right?
Right.
So you will need trees or whatever have we. And create more green spaces, create more photosynthesis. Yeah, so absolutely. Understand it. And also make green roofs. Mm. Why? Because you actually contain a certain heat reduction into it. Mm. Plus green gardens. Again, it's a living, it's a lifestyle. Mm. Creating green gardens. I think most people here, as some of my developers, I was coming to him and I was having a fur, and he was saying, this is safety food. Mm. And he applied to that, I grow my own vegetable in my garden because I only trust those vegetables. And you know, it's again, I can bring the development down to what people trust in. If they trust in the food, they will eat it, right? If they trust in the developer, creating something great for them, they will buy it. Mm. And again, you have the big names, it just comes in and look really good. Mm. That's okay, that's a marketing tool, but there needs to be some truth to it. Mm. Everything I sit and every detail I'm doing, I'm selecting the marble, the cement, the groove between the tile. I'm selecting your sanitary ware, right? And I'm asking, can you do... You know, can we go for more green sanitary ware? Can we do saving water? How can we do things, right? And again, so for us, what can I do in my industry? I can demand more from my suppliers, say, how green is your products? And there's a huge change in that too. I mean, of course, everyone wants to be into it. Again, on different level, understanding how much they can do in their, let's say, production to lower down the minimum waste of water and energy and all of that. So from all perspective, we come in, but we just need to do it collectively, I guess.
Okay.
Everyone. Mm. So, I'm asking.
So maybe we can collaborate on that.
Absolutely. So I'm asking, and we work with a plastic beautiful symbol here.
Right.
It's not only a good intention, it's also like, this is quite cool. I get my own trash and I get it as a chair, for example. I know John Reeves was doing some chairs for this...
the tool collection.
Yes.
Yes.
Interesting to hear about the feedback he got from in Milan. Anyway.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I ask about that because not just designers, but you mentioned like furniture, the suppliers who add all to the design. How could you guys collectively drive that narrative?
There are architects here that are doing it, but it's such an uphill thing because it comes from the architecture, that the way he builds his building and that the developer is buying into his idea. Mm-hmm. So I also guess that it lies heavily on the architect's knowledge of sustainability, which I also found that they don't know that much in Asia. Mm-hmm. We are not as ahead, and maybe that's okay, but in Europe, and especially North of Europe, where I'm coming from, I mean, there are rules and regulation and policies implemented into the building regulation because they just have to follow it now.
Mm.
So they are heavily putting requests, no, not even requests, it's a law. By law, they have to follow building regulation for more environmental sustainable buildings. They cannot go around it.
Okay, interesting. Feng Chan, I just want to first thanks for sharing all your insights, but also opinions about where things are going and where they need to go. My follow-up question, and this relates to the industry that's listening today as well, you don't know everything. You know a lot of things, but you don't know everything. So my follow-up question would be, if a lot of these players and stakeholders aren't informed enough yet, what more kind of content can we be creating at Vietcetera on this podcast or on our platforms that can help drive that at least awareness about what you're talking about?
Let's collaborate and let's find the best in the industry from where
Everywhere.
I'm coming from.
Yeah.
No, from where I'm coming from, because we are quite ahead on, on these sustainability acts of things. And let's learn. Let's learn from them, the one who has spent a lot of money on research of it and the industry that are working around it. And let's get them to here and get them inspire or put a footprint here. They've been here before, and it's been difficult for them because, again, for the different consultants to come in and create, again, talking about green, sustainable, let's say, materials, it's a little bit of a drag for them because, for example, you cannot get recyclable steel here. And that's one thing. Instead of producing...
The demand is not there to satisfy the
So the demands need to be there because if we start making recyclable steel here, then we don't have to ship it from X, Y, and Z or have it made so it's extreme pollution. Making more sustainable cement, concrete.
Okay.
It's just two elements that we're building off. You know, so we don't pollute here. I mean, you know how people offsetting their old trash and move somewhere else. So it's an awareness, but it's also a willingness from the power people here to change and to want to say, okay, we want to use recyclable steel, we do green cement, what have you, because these are the elements. Or in Europe now these days, we do cross-laminated wood timber. We don't build concrete anymore. Bricks is an extreme source of, like making bricks, it's very, you require a lot of energy, whereas bricks these days is still a good, it's just a cladding now. It's not actually a body.
Feng Chan, I have an important question to ask you. I'm sure on any given day, your team is working on multiple projects at once. You have a big team, you can manage that. So out of the pipeline that you have currently and you're looking forward to, are there any clients or projects that are thinking about this right now, not just thinking, but actually doing in your pipeline?
I'm glad you asked him because I had to go and ask my managing director and said, yes, actually.
There is.
We have two projects where they are focusing on being more sustainable, whereas I'm not sure where it applies to, if it applies in the construction or it applies to the operation. But I'm working with two clients right now that actually
have
it. Yes. Okay. So I didn't want to be say like, oh, I know what is doing it because there's a lot. No, there is some doing it by now. 5-10 years down the road, there will be more.
And at what stage are these projects in? Do you know?
We're all in development, which means before construction.
Before construction. Yeah. Okay, because I'm about to make a suggestion where as a media company, we would love to cover these projects while they're in development.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's like a mini documentary that we can make out of this because
that would be great,
I think,
actually.
You know, I'm trying to visualize everything that you're putting together in this value chain. And I could piece it together, but that's also because I've talked to a lot of people in this industry and I've seen enough other mini docs at a global level somehow describing parts of this value chain. But I suggest that only because I think that would be an amazing value for Vietnamese developers and also buyers at an individual level who could be thinking about this. And they're wondering like, okay, I kind of get the picture, but you know, this is going to be a process, right? And I think... we mentioned it earlier, this is not an overnight change. I think people need to see it actually in reality.
It's a good
so
idea.
So if you are working on something in development, there is that opportunity to capture that content, that story, and hopefully the result is good too, to see
that. No, absolutely.
That
no, it'll be, I think that will make sense.
Okay.
It'll put together the puzzle.
Yeah, very good, very good.
Yeah.
Well, if you're another architect, studio, or even development company out there working on a sustainable project, we'd love to hear from you. I'm sure Feng Chan would as well, in terms of you could be in development stage, thinking about it even toward the end. There's chances to document a lot of these different projects that are happening right now in Vietnam. So please do reach out. And hopefully this podcast achieves that. Thank you so much for being on the show today, Feng Chan. By the way, a shout out. I'm sure if you're looking for a job in the space, contact Feng Chan. She might be hiring.
I just want to say thank you for giving me the time and space for you know, lifting my heart.
Awesome.
I know I'm just one person here and I can only do that much, but I really, if anyone hears me from a governmental perspective, it comes from there. It comes from the heart of wanting to do good for the entire population here. And that's where I'm coming from. And I'm not even from here, but I'm like, how can we not want to make this place the greatest?
Mm-hmm.
And we, as an Asian country, you know, we have the chance right now to make it the most sustainable in Asia.
Mm.
And I think that should be our mission.
A very noble one and a very good one. And hopefully profitable too. Thank you so much, Fong Chan, for sharing here today on the podcast. Vietnam Innovators, another episode. Thanks, guys, for listening in. Tune in every single Tuesday for a new episode on Vietnam Innovators. The latest one, of course, with Fong Chan. We'll see you guys next time. Take care. You can also check out the video version of this podcast on our other platforms such as YouTube and Facebook. New episodes are out every week. So don't forget to subscribe to Vietcetera's Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube channel for more interesting content.